So what are we doing here? What's going on?
Oh, yeah, this is all we're doing. Literally.
This is just it. We're just
going to waste
out.
An hour of your time, Joe. I hope you don't mind.
What would you say that we do here?
Everything sucks. Just kidding. Everything is great. No, really, I haven't thought about my ex today. Oh, wait.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to another edition of the Bad Weather Podcast, a show dedicated to men's mental health and women's mental health, helping you weather your storm, whatever that may be. I'm one of the hosts, JP Hurley, joining this week once again, my trusty pal, Jonathan Miller. I'm trying to think of some sort of crazy, silly moniker for you to mention in between your first and last name.
Jonathan, well, this is the sound
Blake
of my
Miller.
Voice, and I like
the
trusty
goose.
Pal. That makes me sound like a little kid, kind of, your sidekick, your... Here, buddy, hold this for me.
I'm going to throw it out there for you guys. It's the goose.
Jonathan Goose Miller.
Dude, Goose
That's
Miller.
Ridiculous. So we'll introduce you, nameless voice, in a second. But I was walking through the office today and was going to call you, Hurley, and was going to say, what was I going to say? What's the line? Talk to me, Goose. I was going to say, talk to me, Goose.
Oh, no way. What a coincidence.
And then somebody walked up to me and I didn't call you back. Anyway.
What's a coincidence?
Yeah, hey, what's going on, fellas?
What's a twist? You know, not a lot. And there is another voice that you're hearing, as Jonathan proudly mentioned, the nameless voice in the background, is none other than Joseph P. Cibula. Joe, number one, welcome to the show.
Hi, glad to be here.
Ooh, that sounded convincing. Are you
wow,
really glad
conviction.
To be here?
Yeah, conviction.
I don't think so. For the listeners out there, Joseph is a personal trainer. He's many, many things, but he's also one thing that he is to me is my best friend since junior high, seventh grade, I think. We met in the back
in
of the
bit.
Bus. Joe taught me how to gleek. John, do you know what gleeking is?
Sure do. Absolutely. That's good back of the bus material right there. What the hell else are you going to do with your time?
Literally, his cold open for our friendship was, hey, you want me to show you how to gleek? I'm like, fuck yeah, I do. And I've been gleeking
Joe,
for 35 years.
Are you guys the same age or what's your age?
John is... almost a year older than me. He's like 6 months older than me. Yeah.
So you reached out to an older kid and worked your way in.
He was an upperclassman.
Yeah, yep. Look at you.
That was
making
that
headway.
Was the move.
Nice.
That's showed some balls there on the back of that bus. Just gleeking away, soaking those
gleeking
seats.
Away.
Oh, you showed your balls too?
I mean, it was that kind
of each
a
other's balls.
Hey,
yeah,
hey kid, you want me to show you how to show your balls?
This one's called, I got some gum on my pants.
I was going to say, is this your gum?
I love that one. For listeners, if you haven't heard of that one, you just kind of like, throw out. I'm not even going to go into it. We're going to skip
that.
It wouldn't make the cut anyway.
No, carry on. I'm super curious.
No. Details. Not carrying on. But like I said, first and foremost, for the sake of this show, for its benefit, Joe is a personal trainer. He's in the industry. I think he's mostly, probably best represented on Instagram. Maybe, Joe, I'll let you kind of like let our listeners know where they can find you, the Ladder app, all the things.
Sure. So, Instagram is kind of the base. It's just Joe, Joe _ Cibula, C as in cat, E, B as in boy, ULA. Yeah, it is a little bit of a goofy name, but, it's good for branding. Same on TikTok, and you can just search me on Facebook. I'm active on there as well. All the things. The big one is the Maximus podcast. You might also find it as the Real Alpha Mindset. We're doing a little bit of a rebrand on that. That is available wherever podcasts are found. And we also do a video stream on YouTube. And then me and my podcasting partner, business partner, one of my other best friends, Bobby Maximus, former UFC fighter, fitness training legend. We run the podcast together. And then we also are partnered on the Ladder Fitness app. And so we manage a team, and there are about a dozen teams on the app with different coaches. And Bobby and I split one team we just call Maximus. And so you can just search in the app store for Ladder, and the Ladder Fitness app will pop up and choose Team Maximus. And we'll get you sorted out.
I love it. Cool. I don't know why they call it Ladder, but my assumption is that like if you're kind of in a pit of despair with your physical and mental health, we're going to give you a ladder to climb up out of that pit.
I honestly don't know either.
Let's go
with
mine.
The company for several
it's
got to
be like a step-by-step thing, right? Like climb the ladder, like one rung at a time.
Somebody in the marketing department was like, what would be good? And they were just like, cool, let's roll with it. And now we're stuck.
His name is like James Ladder.
Yep.
You're wearing a Ladder shirt right now, right? I like the the branding on that thing. Yeah.
It looks like bladder with this the little Ladder symbol in front of it. But this is what you will see in the app store. You'll know it's the right one. It looks like a little ladder.
Little ladder icon.
The Bladder Fitness app.
Bladder's a totally different app about how, about me navigating a 35-minute drive and finding as many bathroom spots as I can find.
It's all the same. It's training. It's what are your goals, you know?
Yeah, right.
I will say I have a very fit bladder. I don't know if that's appropriate, but
yeah.
I'm proud of you.
I have what this we call a weak bladder. Friends. I need to work
you
on
do have a weak bladder.
My pelvic floor exercises are a little lacking, I think.
Coincidentally, John, you and I have some plans this weekend for some good old-fashioned bingo, and I kind of put out the itinerary for the weekend, and it's like 12:30, show up to the bar, 1:30, bingo begins, 1:35, John uses the bathroom for the first time.
Which is ambitious as hell, because that's an hour and 35 minutes after I show up. There's no way I'm making that. I'll be in there long before that.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially if I'm having a beer.
That's true.
I got some questions. Can I get into some questions?
Yeah, hit me with some questions.
Cool. Can I set this up?
Yeah, sure.
I'll set it up and then you get into it. So just for the listener's sake, we thought this would be a kind of a fun opportunity considering Joe's in the industry and fitness is kind of a really big part of our like journey to healing. Like if you've gone through some bad weather, you know very well that there's a lot of things that affect your mental health. And there's a few better ways to kind of achieve, you know, a higher state of mental health than, you know, focusing on your physical fitness. So we thought we'd use this opportunity to kind of have like a crossover podcast with Joe and talk about some things fitness related that our listeners can do. And, you know, even John and I can do to kind of help us get out of those pits to give us the ladder. So I think that's kind of like the important piece here with this podcast. And John, go ahead and take it away, man. Let's get this going.
Right on. Joe, how did you get into fitness and training in the first place?
I'd always been active, right? So junior high school, I played sports. You know, I did football in the fall, basketball in the winter, track and field in the spring. When I graduated, I went to the University of Iowa. So I went from a dinky little town in Wisconsin to a D1 school. I was a good football player in high school, but not D1 good, right? Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like, what do you just like give up on athletics? And I ended up falling into the University of Iowa Taekwondo team. Just got into martial arts. I absolutely loved it. And it consumed my life for my entire duration at the university and for many, many years after. And so a lot of what I was learning about fitness, about weight training, about conditioning, sports performance, it all was around martial arts. It was around fighting. In fact, that was how I met Bobby. And here we are years later as business partners. So that was kind of how I got into it. I should lay the foundation here. I think this is a really, really important piece of my journey was my divorce. Because it was actually JP who pulled me out. He was the one that handed me a ladder when my first marriage fell apart. And so I ended up living on his couch for a little while until I kind of got back on my feet. And part of that process was the physicality of it. I was trying to find my way into fitness as a career, honestly. And I don't think either of us saw that coming at the time. But when it started to happen, it just made too much sense. I was in the basement of the Hurley household doing like P90X for months. And looking for jobs and working. And then I ended up kind of kicking off a whole nother career and just sort of, you know somebody who knows something. And then the next thing you know, they're like, hey, CrossFit Twin Cities is looking for a coach. And 10 years later, I was the sole owner of the business. I sold the business. I got out of it right before the pandemic, which was lucky for me. I was just able to pivot to doing a lot more online stuff. But once I kind of got my foot in the door with that, I ended up running a gym for the better part of a decade, actually two different gyms. That's really how I got into it, is it's just sort of where I needed to be. And I think particularly and why it's important to bring up my past on this is because that was so key to me getting out of the spot that I was in, because I was low, as you might imagine. And the act of starting to take care of myself was instrumental in me healing and becoming confident enough to start a business, to be out on my own. I haven't been employed by another person for quite some time now. I mean, I'm the quintessential entrepreneur. And I am partnered with the Ladder folks. But even that is on like a contractor basis. And so going from being very beat down, very full of doubt, not really sure where my future was, to confident enough to just take the helm of my life and just steer it. And then, of course, to see the improvements that I've made along the way, massive upgrades all the way around. I live a pretty remarkable life these days. And a lot of that just has to do with the fact that, A, I had somebody there who could help pull me up. And then B, I started doing the simple things, which is just taking care of myself. And now here I am.
Cool. Can we back up a little bit and talk about your divorce and that relationship at all? Or sure. Like how you ended up on JP's couch?
I got no secrets.
Except how long, that one. The one secret.
Well, the one we talked about before we started rolling. But we all signed off on that, right? We're not going to talk about that body in the woods.
Okay.
All right. Tell me how long you were married.
7 years.
And did you see the writing on the wall? Was it a slow cycle down? Was it all a big blow up? What all happened there?
I think I was the last one to see the writing on the wall. I think literally everybody else had that sense, even as I went into it. I think to my credit, I'm a very good communicator. So despite the issues that we were having, I think we were able to really work around them until we just weren't. And a lot of that, I really believe now in retrospect, just stems from the fact that it was right out of college. We were really young. I think we were both just looking for stability. And then, I mean, when you're at that age, you just don't have stability. You know, you don't really have a lot of money in the bank. You're paying back student loans. You're working multiple jobs. You're trying to discover yourself. And it was just a bad time to be trying to have the whole family thing, to have a marriage, to have a partnership like that when we weren't really sure where we were going or what we were doing. So I do feel like it was a youthful ego that kind of pushed us into it. As it got towards the end, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was not ready for that at all. When the D word was first dropped on me, that hurt. I mean, that shut my world down. That was, and I remember the moment. I mean, the world went black for me, you know, and I felt like such a failure. I felt like just a worthless, like unwantable person for a while. And I did realize that that wasn't the case, but that was how I felt. You know, your feelings are not rational. And so there was a lot of me processing my way through that. I did insist that we go to a counselor, and that was so helpful. Like, oh my God, that flipped the switch for me. And it was just one session. And I have been a proponent of, when in doubt, talk it out. Like, go see somebody, go talk to a professional. Because they just see things in ways that you don't. And even when you think that you can kind of, you know, logic your way around a problem, having that outside perspective, somebody who's not tied to the outcome in any way, shape, or form, it's just invaluable. Invaluable.
What did you learn in there? Or what lights came on for you in there?
So the therapist asked this question of me, and it started this whole chain of thinking. And the question was, let's say that you guys work this out. Let's say that we give this up. We're just going to carry on as usual. Where do you see yourself in 2 years? And I had to sit back and think about it. And it was like, I just didn't see things changing. I didn't see anything like I couldn't imagine that somehow we would go back to where we were before the D word got dropped on me. Like that hurt so bad. I didn't know that I could get past it. And then she's like, what about 3 years? What about 4 years? What about 10 years? And all I could picture was the same scenario, but with a house, with kids, with real property, like with more stuff to have to figure out. And maybe it was older. My mind.
Lost those years of your life too. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you're back on the market when you really don't want to be. But I swear in my mind, I looked at that therapist as this was dawning on me, and I saw her mouth the word run. And I don't know if that was real. I might have hallucinated. My God.
Wow. Like, I love that.
Yeah, it was just like, yeah. And so when we walked out of that session, I mean, even my ex at that time, like, I think that line of questioning helped her figure out that she didn't want to fight for it, if that makes sense.
So post that session, then obviously then you went through the divorce and it still was difficult, but at least you had some clarity on like, I know this is going to be a hard road, but I know this is the right way to go.
Yeah, I mean, it went from I have no idea where to go, what to do, or how to feel about it, to it's all business. All right, we need a lawyer. We need to figure this out. I'm going to have to find a place to stay. I'm going to have to figure out, you know, do I want to stay with my job? Do I want to try to leave? Like, figuring all that stuff out just became, that was the thing. That was then my focus, was who, yep. who can I rely on? Where is my, my support group? Who is there to lend a hand? And,
who's
you know,
got a
fortunately,
couch?
I, yeah, I mean, so, my very good friend, even to this day, Carrie, she put me up for a little while, got through sort of that awkward period of like, the divorce was still going through the courts. I needed a place to stay. I wasn't going to stay at home. We lived yep. with my ex's parents. So it was just like super complicated. And that just solved that. You know, it was like, I could get all the stuff that was mine, got it out of the house. I literally went through the house with like those big contractor bags, and anything that was mine, I just threw it in the bag, tossed it in my car, and took it over to Carrie's place. Anything I left behind, gone. It's yours.
You I want to go to the get into some of the details of this, like the marriage and like the falling out and stuff, because Joe, John, just for your benefit, Joe has a very, by the way, I just realized right now that all three of our names begin with J, so this is going to be awesome.
I know.
For people that
That's
are listening.
The thing about the show. You
is
can't
it Joe, John,
anymore,
or is yeah. it JP? I don't know. Joe has a really wild story, like when you get into the context of it, and it's very interesting. We still talk about some of the details even to this day of it. From living in Korea to being concerned about infidelity, like there's a lot there. And Joe, maybe if you can maybe give at least the Cliff's Notes of it so we can save some time to talk about fitness.
Sure.
Would really love to hear that. And I'm just going to watch John's reactions.
Sure. So after college, so my degree was in film studies, media production. I had this amazing background as a national level competitive taekwondo fighter. And my life's dream was to get into the movies. But I graduated in May 2001. And in September of 2001, Hollywood shut down. Everybody that I knew, every connection that I had, they were out of business. So I ended up working in local TV in Waterloo, Iowa, at this TV station, KWWL, say that 10 times fast. And that's sort of where I was. I had worked my way from entry level, just being on the floor. In fact, my ex worked there as well, just as a production assistant. And I ended up as an audio operator. I ended up being the director of the morning and noon newscast. And then I ended up working in the marketing department. And so I was with the company there for, I want to say about 3 years, just sort of working my way up and enjoying for the most part the work. But the politics, the station politics, just started getting nasty. Managers mm-hmm. were just not kind to each other. The pressure of just being in a live TV situation, everybody vying for leadership. I was really getting burnt out of it. And I had this really great mentor that I worked with, and he got burnt out and quit. And so it was just me and actually my friend Carrie. We both worked there together. We were just sort of stuck. And I had this opportunity. One of my hobbies in college, besides taekwondo, was this obscure Korean sword art called gumdo, which is Japanese kendo, but taught by a Korean master. So it's just like Korean terminology. So very like samurai sword stuff. You wear the funky armor and you fight with a bamboo stick.
Wow.
And I had the opportunity to go to Vancouver for the World Championship. And just being that I was so involved with martial arts, I spoke a little bit of Korean. I took a year in college. And while I was there, I met the Korean national team and ended up becoming tight with these guys. And they invited me over to Korea to live and train. They're like, hey, we'll put you up. You can basically work at one of our gumdo schools. You can teach English. You make a ton of money over there. There's like a big demand for this. And so I sat down with the wife and I just said, well, listen, maybe I should just do it. And she's like, she was in school. So she's like, I can't take time off to go to Korea, but I think you should go. And so we agreed. And I left and I ended up living in Korea for 14 months. Now, she did come over there in the summer. So we did have a good 3 months together there. But for that time that we were apart, I mean, it was a challenge. You know, we'd only been together a couple of years at that point. So trying to figure out communication, trying to figure stuff out. But for me, it was just nose to the grindstone. I was there to work. I was there to make money. I was sending tons of money home. You know, I had basically a whole separate life over there where I had an apartment and a car and like a social life. But I had this wife back home and I was sending her money and texting her on ICQ. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm curious about the digital communication world back then. But yeah, I remember ICQ.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like that was huge. Like we spent hours, hours at night just chatting back and forth. It was night for me. It was mornings for her. But I mean, it was the same, like with the rest of my family, that was pretty much how we communicated most of the time. I don't know. What do you say? She texted me. It wasn't really a text back then. It was like, she messaged me on there and said, we need to talk. And I ended up getting on the phone with her and her mom. And the first words out of her mouth were, I want you to promise you're not going to get on a plane and come home. And it was like, what are you talking about? Well, she was at a conference. She's a doctoral student at the university there. And she was at this conference and she said she had done her presentation. It went really well. A bunch of her friends were hanging out at a bar. She met this guy. She got a little tipsy. She thinks maybe he slipped something into her drink and he ended up sexually assaulting her.
Jesus.
And so then I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm really tempted to like hop on a plane and fly home and, you know, take care of business. But then again, I don't know all the details of this. Like part of it's like what, like the way she told the story, it was questionable to me as to what the truth of it was. Was she telling me her experience? Was she hiding certain details from me? Like it's hard to tell. And again, I ended up contacting a different counselor that I worked with over, I want to say about 3 or 4 weeks of having regular meetings with to just sort of work my way through the frustration, trying to understand like how to deal with this while I'm literally a world away. And what I came to was I married this woman. I know she's an intelligent woman. I have to trust her. I want to be able to trust my wife. And the only way I'm going to be able to do that is to just say, I trust her. I trust what she says. And I kind of let it go at that. And it wasn't long after that, that she was with me in Korea. And I mean, from that point on, it seemed like things were okay. We were going to be all right. Come back home, right? I'm there for 14 months. Very nice reunion. Again, I'm working. She has more conferences that she goes to. And this is where I started noticing that I seemed to be rubbing her the wrong way. And I'm not saying that I'm completely 100% innocent. I think, I'm a loud, sort of angry person a lot of the time. And I think that she got super frustrated with that. And her way of dealing with it was to try to rub my face in it. And so it became really like confrontational. And I was like really having a hard time just like calming down. Like not getting upset about it. And she went off to another conference and comes back and tells me that she was making out with some guy from like Argentina. And it was almost like it was a dig. It was like an attempt to get a rise.
Guess
out
what
of
I, like she guess wasn't what sure I did, if she yeah. could.
And it, that was the moment when I was like, okay, there's some major, major problems here. Like this is not something that's super forgivable. And the nature of that infidelity affected my relationship with her parents, which hurt the most because I was very tight with them. But to see them trying to defend their daughter, trying to downplay this thing because they didn't want our little family to fall apart, like that to me was a serious a hurt to me.
Yeah.
And it was during that moment when she dropped the D word on me and we went through that whole process. So kind of telling that whole story in another way. But in retrospect, I do believe that there was some serious infidelity, and I doubt that that was the ones I heard about, the ones I know of. I sincerely doubt that they were the only issues that were there.
Yeah. She only brought you the one she brought you because she was done.
Yeah.
She was done dealing with it.
It was like, I need to break this off and this is the easiest way for me to do it kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
These conferences sound like they're getting scandalous. Like, geez, what the heck?
Watch yourself. Listen, if you're a student.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to tell you, I think a lot of this goes on at conferences. Mm-hmm. I've been involved in conferences a little bit in the last couple of years, and it's 8-9 hours of meetings, and then people get a little tipsy during the happy hour. Yeah. And I bet that's not the first time that's happened.
No. Is that true for school conferences also, or?
Sure. What the hell? Not elementary school.
But like for me, I was so proud of her. You know, she was asked to present at like this, these international events, and it's like this is my wife. I know she's an intelligent person. I think she's capable of stuff. And then that's what she took home.
Yeah.
That's disappointing. Joe, I want to ask like if you can remember, because this is we're quite a few years removed for the context of the listener. Mm-hmm. This is like a dozen years ago now, maybe more. But do you remember how you went through? Because like you had to kind of process this is infidelity. Your marriage was coming to an end. Do you remember like how you kind of like what your method was at kind of attacking like the feeling of betrayal that you had and like what you did as a result?
So I always say there were two moments. There was the initial moment. And then there was like when I was with a counselor and I had to like figure out next steps. The initial moment for me was I'm leaving town. And I was just like so upset and so broke and so hurt. And I got in the car and I started driving. And it was probably, you know, 20, 30 minutes of just driving around town until I realized like I was heading north. I was down in Iowa and I was heading up towards the Twin Cities. And so I made a couple phone calls and it was Lee was like, why don't you come on up here? I'll take care of you for the weekend. And I'm like, cool. Went up. I hung out with our mutual friend Lee and he handed me a bottle of Johnny Walker Red Label. And over the course of the next, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours, we went to just meet different groups of his friends. And we just had that bottle with us. And over the course of the night, that bottle was empty. Yeah. And the night is a blur, as you might imagine. But I remember waking up in JP's basement the next day, more hungover than I think I had ever been. But despite how awful that feeling is, despite how like just sick and nauseous, like it felt better than the pain of divorce. And so I just leaned into that and I said, well, listen, I feel like throwing up. I feel like dying. I feel like, you know, I never want to touch alcohol again. And I'd rather deal with that right now than the emotional pain of what I was dealing with. And so it became like, I can't worry about whether she cheated on me, whether I'm just making this all up, whether it's my fault, her fault. I couldn't even process that. I had to get water. I had to get to the bathroom before I ruined somebody's rug. You know what I mean? It was like, it was enough of a distraction. And then as I started to feel better, it actually dawned on me that I would heal from this as well. It was like, listen, if I can take care of my physical body, if I can, if, you know, just focus on the basics of like, I need food, I need water, I need to like heal. Well, then I can heal emotionally as well. And that really opened me up to things like going to therapy or talking about my feelings with my guy friends, right?
Yeah, and therapy it really and talking about your feelings and fitness and all those things are the water. You know, that's the water that you needed kind of like to heal from that.
Well, and I mean, it just because that hurt, the physical pain of being hungover hurt bad enough that you have to focus on life things. You got to remember to breathe. You got to remember to hydrate. You're going to have to figure out the food and shelter stuff. Like when those things are taken care of, then you can worry about the higher functioning stuff, right? And it's like, it forced me to just go back to basics. And that ends up being really the theme for my career in fitness of like, why, what am I bringing to the fitness industry that I think is lacking? And to me, that's it. It comes from this martial arts background of showing up every day, the discipline. I was the most dedicated student, like 3 years running at the university because I never missed a class. I never missed a training session. You know, I never missed a tournament or an opportunity to compete. And no wonder I was good, right? It's not magic. It's not like I was born with the Taekwondo genes. I was training hours upon hours every day of the week for years. And that was just because I loved it. It was fun. It was easy for me to do that. And so again, focusing on these basic physical things, these ideas of like, you have to take care of yourself on a day-to-day basis. You have to do the basic movements. You've got to breathe hard. You've got to move some load. You know, there's basic movement functions like hinging or lunging or pressing or pulling. These are just like your vitamins, your minerals, the different parts of your diet that you need to have in so that you can be well-rounded. And when all those pieces are there, you can build a pretty remarkable thing on top of that, but it comes from something physical. And so my thing that I tell people is if I can teach you how to do a push-up, just one good solid push-up, the amount of work that it takes, the practice that it takes, it can change your entire life. Because once you've learned that process, you just apply it to the next thing, apply it to the next thing, to the next thing. So you can do a push-up, you can do a sit-up, you can do a sit-up, you can do a squat. You can do squats, we can do loaded squats. Now we can get you into powerlifting for crying out loud. And if you can do all of those things, well, why don't you apply that to your finances? Why don't you apply that same methodology to your relationships, to your friendships, to your romantic interests? You know, how's your relationship with your wife? And are you actually putting work into it every damn day? Because that's what it takes.
Okay, all I got out of that was after this podcast is over, I'm going to go deadlift my girlfriend a few times because you want me to put that into my relationships, right?
Yeah.
I got move, I got move a load, and I'm not sure what,
moving,
what to do with that.
Moving load.
Okay. Joe, talk to me about motivation and discipline for that stuff. I mean, as a trainer, coach, instructor, however you style yourself there,
I imagine you run into people who maybe don't have the discipline you had or are looking to have that discipline. And I think there's like good science on like how many times you need to do something before it becomes like a habit or a routine, or, you know, you do start to love it. Like you, mm-hmm. like you loved martial arts. Talk to me about that a little bit and how you like motivate people to continue on.
I think the first misconception that people have is that motivation is this thing that gets you up and going and keeps you going. And it just doesn't. Most days, I don't feel very motivated. I don't feel super motivated to do my job on a day-to-day basis. I mean, what could motivate me to get out of bed early, drive halfway across the cities, open up a gym, deal with a bunch of crabby people in the morning who really don't want to be there, you know, and then try to inspire them to live better lives? Like, I'm not motivated to do that. I've decided that that's what I'm going to do, and I make the most of it. Mm-hmm. And as you become accustomed to that as your day-to-day, it does become easier to convince yourself to get up, to go. It's just, this is what I do. It's what I always do. Like I said, I think, you know, start with the example of a push-up. If I take you through that process, I teach you, well, listen, okay, here's what your body's capable of right now. Here's what your body could be capable of. And this is the path of how you get there. And I can show you those drills and you can feel those drills working. It's not just hope that keeps you going. It's this inevitable improvement that you can see. And that is the drug, that constant, like, if I can keep building on these basic things, of course I can do amazing things. Of course I can change my whole life. Like, you can see that in the details of it. And that is what people keep coming back for.
And Joel, before we, like, even before that first push up and before, like, you're discovering motivation and a routine, before you walk down to your basement to do the push up, or before you get in your car to go to the gym to do the push up, I'd be a complete idiot if I didn't mention this. This is something that you actually inspired me to do, and I still do this. This is probably like a decade worth of work. Before you even get to the point where you're going to do the push-up, you got to get your ass out of bed or get, you know, take that first step towards the basement to do that. Yeah. And like the simplest of simple things that you told me to do, I still do it in the morning. It's like I'm laying there, I'm awake. I don't ever have an alarm clock, but I wake up, I look at my fucking phone. I'm like a lazy piece of shit. Like for the first couple minutes, I'm looking at things. My eyes are like, you know, no longer being blurry. I'm thinking about the silliest little bullshit, you know, that I'm going to be doing for the day and stuff like that. And I'm like, should I go to the gym? I don't know. And I play this whole game inside my brain. If I should, like, you know, get the motivation to go. And instead of like sitting there toiling over it for moments and moments and moments, and like minutes become hours and like hours become days, and I'm laying in bed for what seems like days, I do this simple trick and I just say to myself, 1, 2, 3, get up. Mm-hmm. And it really fucking forces me to get out of bed and take the first step towards the basement or towards the gym. And that, like, for me, it's all about momentum. And if I build that momentum by taking that first step towards putting a shirt on and getting some socks on and going to the gym, like that, like everything else falls into place for
it's
me. So like it starts with the silliest little thing.
It's easy to build momentum, but you have to start moving. So there's two things I'll say about that. And one, if you're sitting at home, you're listening to this podcast and you're comfortable right now, but you know you've got a list of things to do and you don't even know where to start. The first thing on your list, always stand up. Just get off your butt. Stand up. Step two, do it. Whatever, like pick, I think like you've already stood up. You just have to keep standing up at this point. It's way easier. You know what I mean? When you're sitting back and you're comfortable, that's the problem. You know, I had this conversation with my daughter this morning, 8 years old. She's got the most comfortable bed I have ever seen in my life. And she's got this great big comforter and she's just curled up in it. And she's like, I don't want to go to school. And I'm like, I wouldn't want to go to school either. That looks really comfy. I would die in that position. That could be like the best life you ever had, you know, but that's not realistic. You have to put down the blanket. You have to get up off that comfortable position. And then once you do, the motivation is there because like I said, you're already starting to go. And the second part of that trick is the countdown. And for me, this is a key to deal with any of those things that you have to do that you're not necessarily excited to do, is to just take a breath and then say 3, 2, 1, go, and then just begin. Whether it's doing dishes, folding laundry,
I fucking love
vacuuming
that.
The floor, taking the dog for a walk, any of those things where you're just like, 3, 2, 1, and then you're out. And then it has that same effect.
Nauseously, you take the first step and you still do it. I always, Joe, I always think about the, John, you're going to love this reference. I always think of about the movie The Matrix. It's my favorite movie of all time. there's a scene where like Trinity, one of the protagonists, jumps through a window and she's like in the middle of a fight. She rolls down the stairs. She's laying on her back. She's got the guns pointed at the window waiting for the bad guy to show up. He doesn't. She's there for a few moments and she says to herself, "Get up, Trinity, get up." And then she gets up and she runs off and she continues on about like what she was working on. And I keep thinking about that. Whenever I do the 3-2-1 go, I think about like I'm laying down, Trinity, get up before Agent Smith shows up and has a fight.
That's such great advice. I do a ton of work around my house, Joe, and that one of the things I notice is like once I get started on something, I don't want to stop.
Right.
But it's that picking up the tool bag or going out to the garage and setting up the saw and getting ready to cut the trim or starting the paint or whatever
I'm doing. Think about this. You've got all that on your list, right? And you're sitting there in a chair. And you're like, fine, I'm going to stand up. And so you stand up. Now you have a choice. Do I go do the thing that I stood up to go do, or do I sit back down?
Yeah.
Because if you sit back down, you know that you have chosen, I'm not doing any of that stuff.
Uh-huh. That's right. No, I love it. I mean, you could sit and have, I mean, right now I'm looking across the room. About a week ago, I took out the paint that I have, and like designated which color is going on which wall. Right. So I just like put a splash on this wall and a splash on that wall. And when I get to it, I'll get to it. But like, I almost did that because it drives me nuts looking at these random splashes on the wall. And at some point when I get some free time, I'm just going to stand the fuck up and go goddamn do it and get rid of it, because the alternative is to sit there and look at it and let it pick at me and go, what's this doing? This unfinished thing is just sitting
stand up, bitch.
Poking you on the forehead like Chinese water torture.
Get up, Trinity.
At some point, John's just going to leave this show and start working on that because we've motivated him enough to... There he goes. He's gone.
We've done
time
it.
To start painting.
Secretly, this was an intervention about your bad, your shoddy paintwork.
Just stood up and walked out of the shot.
Oh, that's so good. And so I love how this correlates to the fitness goal of this show. And Joe, I want to kind of go into some of the weeds on like some of those things that we can maybe give tools to the listeners and... If you're that guy right now, you're that girl that needs to take that first step. We've given you some tips on motivating yourself, building momentum. Now, maybe like some things like after you've gotten motivated, you've gotten into the gym or you've gotten in your basement and you're ready to do some work. My first tip, and I want to get Joe's ideas or like thoughts around this and maybe some input on what they could be doing. My first piece of advice is do shit that you enjoy. If you don't do shit that you're enjoying, it's not sustainable. And while doing shit you enjoy, it's going to kind of open the door and just build towards other shit that you find that you enjoy too. So like, Joe, what are some of the simplest movements? You talked about some of them in the middle of your divorce story. What are some of the simplest movements that people who are just getting started on their fitness journey can focus on to kind of like build towards a bigger picture?
Sure. So a couple of things about that, because I think the process has to be enjoyable. The problem I think a lot of people have is that a lot of the stuff you need to do for fitness are not inherently enjoyable. And so they go into it already not wanting to go into it. The key, and this is so important, but this is also sort of the joy of this. This is like the good news that I can share with everybody, is that consistency is so much more important than intensity. It is more important that you show up and that you take an effort every single day than that it is that you go to the gym and you throw yourself in the fire. Bobby and I always say you swim in the pool of shadows. You tear your soul in half, right? You don't need to do that. If you've never worked out before and you come and you try to do the workout that I'm doing, you will never work out again. I promise. You will hate it.
Or
you will
hate
me. Yeah. And you're probably going to get hurt. It takes a while to build up to that. Fitness comes at the rate at which cells divide, and it is not fast. It takes months for your body to like create new muscle. So a lot in the beginning is just learning how to use what you already have, which if you've never worked out, if you've been, you know, just think about it. If you've been a couch potato your whole life, your body has evolved to be a better couch potato. So you've got to climb this mountain. And the most important thing we can do is to get you that daily dose of change. And so the very first thing I tell people, and this is, it's such brilliant advice, because it's one of those things where it's one action that you can take towards one particular goal that's also going to feed literally every other process that you need to be going through, especially when the chips are down. And that is to go for a damn walk.
Uh-huh.
When you stand up, when I'm like 3-2-1, go stand up, walk out of your house, get outdoors, and just go for a walk. And that counts for today. And if you're really out of shape, a 10-minute walk might leave you a little winded. Cool. That's great. So here's how you do it. I'm going to walk out for 5 minutes. I'm going to turn around. I'm going to walk back. Now, tomorrow, how do I feel? Am I so achy sore that I can't get up and do it again? No, you literally just walked for 10 minutes. So even if you're really broken, that's not like high impact. That's not going to leave you sore. So your goal the next day is however far you walked in that first 5 minutes, you got to walk one step further. Then turn around and get back. The next day, we're just trying to go one step further, one step further every single day. And if you keep that up over the course of a month, 2 months, 3 months, half of a year, you're going to get to a point where you're running because it's the only way that you're going to be able to get that next step in. And now guess what? You went from couch potato to a runner and only 10
running
minutes a
potato.
Day. Yeah, 10 minutes a day, every day. And you've given your body time to catch up and you've never increased the intensity so much that it's even intimidating. You should be able to just be like, I'm going to go for my walk. Now, is 10 minutes of running going to change your life in the long run? Well, eventually you got to go 20, 30, 40, 60 minutes of running if you're going to continue down that path. Secondarily, there's things that are also helpful, like lifting weights, movement. So some of the basic stuff, push-ups, sit-ups, squats, don't even go any further than that. Get those movements down well. And again, you don't have to start your push-ups on the floor. If you've never been able to do a push-up, don't expect to. You know, it's like I've never figured out how to launch a rocket and get a man on the moon. I'm not going to walk into NASA and try to do that today. There's like little things you got to learn along the way, right? So start with your push-ups elevated. Do them off the countertop where you can take some of your body weight off and just work on the range of motion. And then again, every day we're trying to add a rep, right? Maybe add a little bit more time. And you can break it up over the course of the day because it's just that little bit of a dose. And you're not lying in bed at night shaking with fear because of the workout you have the next day. It's like, I'm just going to do a couple of push-ups. I'm just going to do a couple of squats. It's not threatening. It's easy because all you got to do is stand up, do your couple of squats, and then guess what? You can sit down. Check the box for the day. But if you do that today,
I love it.
And then you do that tomorrow, and you do that the next day, and you do that for the next 6 months, it will change your life.
And I want to hammer home the consistency here too, Joe. 2 points on that. Number one, I love you used to do a lot of these different like series on your social media platforms, like TikTok specifically. I see your shit all the time. It's super fun. Like, hey, there's my buddy. You've gone into something really cool that for anybody at any fitness level, whether you're just getting, you know, your first push-ups or if you're more intermediate or more advanced in your fitness and you can do pull-ups, you do lots of different complex lifts and, you know, you're doing deadlifts and you're doing, you know, snatch, clean and snatch and like all kinds of stuff. You will, like, if you stay consistent, this is directly from your social media platforms, in 2 weeks, you'll feel it. What's your slogan? I think it's 2 weeks, you'll feel it.
In 2 weeks, you'll feel it.
In 4 weeks,
friends and family will see it.
Friends and family, in 4 weeks, you'll see it. In 8 weeks, other people will see it.
It's 2, 4, 6. So yeah, it's
2, 4, 6.
Yeah. So you'll feel it. 4 weeks, your friends and family will see it and say something. 6 weeks is when you'll see it. And then 8 weeks is when you'll realize your life has basically changed. That's usually the point.
Yeah, and that's
at which
even
now it's
whether you're doing the 10-minute walk or whether you're doing like you know more complex lifts inside of a gym. That's the goal, and like consistency with that is so important to go along with it. I experienced that myself post divorce. I got myself back into fitness, and I was very consistent. And when my friends noticed, they would say, "Well, holy shit, what's going on? What are you doing?" I would say, "I'm on the EFD." workout right now. And then what's that? I'm like, every fucking day. And we just kind of have like a little laugh, but I was dead serious. And it wasn't, I wasn't going to the gym lifting heavy weights every one of those days. I was just getting my ass to the gym. And like some days my body was kind of sore and it would tell me like, yo, you can't do these lifts today. No deadlifts today. So I would just like stretch or maybe like a 5, 10, 15 minute thing on the elliptical, like a very light thing, maybe a little bit of abs, like whatever, you know, just so I got into the gym. I was building this behavior every single day, and I would encourage listeners who are getting into fitness, who are already into fitness, go in every single day, build that behavior, build that culture within yourself to get there every single day. And you'll notice those things that Joe is talking about.
And adding on that too, like there are days when I will go to a gym and I will treat it like a spa. I'm not there to work out. I'm there to show up, maybe use the sauna, you know? Maybe go up, grab some light weights and just kind of like feel it out. And I've heard Terry Crews does a whole thing on this. He's like, if you've never been to the gym before and you're intimidated, that's your attitude going in. I'm going to put on workout clothes. I'm going to walk down to the workout floor. I'm going to play around on a couple machines, you know, where nobody's looking, nobody's bothering me. I don't know what this machine is. You can read the little chart or whatever. You just sort of feel it out, but you're not pushing yourself, right? You're not trying to make your muscles ache or sore. You're really not there to do anything other than just to be there. Go walk on the treadmill for 10 minutes, you know, go sit on a rower, go sit in the sauna, but you're there. And when you leave, you feel better than when you first showed up. And the next day, you can come in, you can do it again. You come in, do it again. And if you do that, let's say you do that for a month where I'm not even here to sweat. I haven't lost a pound. I haven't sweated at all. I haven't felt the slightest discomfort. There comes a point where you're like, well, as long as I'm here, I might as well try something. Because now it's such habit that you're like, I don't have to think about getting up and going. You know, it's 4 o'clock. It's time for me to go to the gym. And as long as I'm there, I'm going to try to get some work done. And then it starts to build up. And then you start getting into different training methodologies or having specific goals. And that's really where like a good coach can help you. You know, if you've got a trainer or a program that you're following. But even I tell people on our app, because our workouts are not easy. They're simple. We keep the movements simple. We use dumbbells and body weight. That's it. And so they're very, very approachable. But for people who've never worked out, or for people, especially people who used to be like high level athletes that haven't worked out in 10 or 20 years, they think they still got it. They will always go too hard out of the gates. And we can see this in the data. This is what's cool about working on an app is you can see the workout data and you can see how many people try your first workout and how long it is until you see their second workout. And you know who went hard, right? And so you got to get in there and you got to remind people like, listen, your goal today is to treat this workout like a dress rehearsal. Put on the clothes, strap the shoes on. You show up, you grab the equipment. And then when we're like, okay, I expect you to do like a 12 rep max bicep curl. You're not doing the 12 rep max. You've got like 5 pounds and you're just like, okay, so this is kind of how it's going to go. Almost like a warm up. But then that's it. Mm-hmm. That's all you do that day. Because now I know you're going to show up tomorrow. And the more you do that, you're going to get tired of lifting little 5 pound dumbbells. You know, and they're usually pink, right? They're always pink. And you got like,
they get the
like, okay, I don't want to lift the pink ones anymore. So then you grab like the 7.5s, and then you're like, oh, like I can kind of see
those are purple.
Usually, you know, and then you get up to like the 8s, the 9s, the 10s.
Teal.
And then, again, color. 6 months, a year, 10 years down the line, you've done so many reps. You're an expert of the bicep curl, and you didn't have to go to school for it. You didn't have to quit your job and become a full time personal trainer. You don't have to get a certification. I got plenty for everybody. Don't worry. You can be good at these movements just because you've done them so much. You know exactly how that's supposed to feel and how it's supposed to move. And again, there's no pressure. There's nobody that says that you're doing things right. You're doing things wrong. Mm-hmm. I tell people, get away from that mentality. I learned this from my old coach, Tony Blauer. Things are desirable or less desirable. Going to the gym is desirable. Going to the gym and working out like really hard and getting a good workout in is very desirable. Going to the gym and kind of walking through it, less desirable, but still desirable. It's not bad to do that. And so you got to get out of like good, bad thinking. Am I doing this right? Am I doing it wrong? Well, you're doing it. So that's desirable. You could be doing it better, which is great, but that's true of anything, you know?
Yeah. I love the low resistance, like just get in the door and let yourself figure it out. I think there's neuroscience that suggests that if you just do anything for 4 weeks, something mm-hmm. like that, it becomes habit. And there's just like you were talking about, Joe, you get into a mindset of, well, this is just the thing I do now. And it's far less of like intimidation or worry about, do I belong in there? Or mm-hmm. am I going to get made fun of because I got the pink weights in my hands, whatever. If you just find a way to make it habit that your nature will take over, your body will kind of take over.
And it's very goal oriented too, because why are we going to the gym? Like, what is the goal? You know, for JP, post-divorce, he wasn't going to the gym because he was like, oh, you know, my pecs need work, or, you know, I need to see the the striations in my shoulders. Like, he was there because he's like, I just need to do something to take care of myself. Uh-huh. So where in there is like a particular training protocol? He's not training for the NFL. You know, he's not trying to be a professional golfer. He's just trying to work out. He's just trying to, like I said earlier, he's just trying to move some load, feel like his body did something. And I think, and this is particular to the audience for this podcast, but I think men need that. We are not meant to sit behind a desk and crunch numbers all day. We're physical beings by our nature. I think that's a very, very much a testosterone sort of based thing. We do better when we're outdoors. We do better when we're moving. You know,
and there's physiological benefits to that too, Joe. Like when we move our bodies, this goes for women too, but like there are physical chemicals that are being released in your brain that fix it. It's meant to be that way.
Yeah. I was listening to a podcast this week that was super interesting. And if I can think of it, I'll put a link in the show notes here, but essentially they were talking about how physical activity and strenuous exercise, people think it improves your mood. What it does more of is mitigate a negative mood.
Yeah.
So it will remove or like dial down negativity and keep you on more of a level plane. It's not like it's going to make you the happiest guy on earth, but it's going to mitigate that negative stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And I even mentioned this in the last episode of our podcast, because I remember reading an article that a counselor had written about dealing with men. And saying that it's very hard to have like a couch and have a man sit down on the couch and then open up about his feeling.
Yeah.
It's a lot better to be like, dude, let's go for a walk. You know what I mean? And then while you're walking, you can kind of talk through your feelings and you can open up to another person. But it's like, give a guy a task and then try opening him up. You know what I mean? Like it's so much better.
That's
huge. I think about all my great training buddies that I have. Like how different the conversations are when we're at the gym.
Yeah.
You know, just great. How much more we can get right to business. And it's funny too, because then it's like, hold that thought. I got to do my set. Spot me. And then
it's like right you're grunting up. Really loud while lifting the pink bicep curl weights, right?
It's very important that you put on a show.
All right, back to business. Important. And then the guy's like looking at you sideways, like, what the fuck was that?
No, that's, I love that. Joe, I do a yearly hunting trip for a week in the fall. And I talk to those guys, you know, we'll go fishing once in a while or we'll do something non-physical, go to a bar, whatever. But like, if I'm walking a trail with those guys, the conversations are always better, you know, that like there's always more work to do. Just because we're walking and the sun is up.
I will go you one further than that, because I was just out in Montana, kind of assistant elk hunting with a very good friend of mine. So we didn't talk at all, but for like two or three hours, just walking through the snow, just tracking an animal. You know what I mean? And we didn't see shit the whole time.
Yeah.
But that was a great time. Like we had so much fun doing that, and we didn't, not a word past either of our lips.
Yeah,
when you guys when you guys remember it, like, do you remember that one time when you pointed towards the hills? That was really cool. There's all just inaudible moments for you guys.
And I smiled and nodded very quietly.
Oh yeah, that was the best part.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, that's cool, Joe. There's like a bonding that can happen. That's like a nonverbal bonding. That's crazy.
And that's why that advice, you know, grab a gym buddy, because two things. You'll work way harder to do what's good for someone else than you will for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like you won't let one of your buddies suffer, but you'll let yourself suffer for sure. You won't reach out for help, but you will go out of your way to help a friend. And so you end up in this weird sort of thing of, I have to go to the gym because JP needs me.
Yeah. And so there's more neuroscience on that.
Yeah.
There's more neuroscience on that.
And yet he's doing the same thing to me. Hey, it all works out. And then we're there. And like I said, all these little things that you do, they start to build other things. You start getting these different chemicals released. You start getting like into this place where it's almost addicting. I need to show up because feel better.
Did you guys train together in college?
Yep.
Martial arts? You did. Okay. Were you guys like sparring partners?
He's the best orange belt I ever fought against.
No kidding. Wow. Yeah. Okay. So I have since, I haven't been into the jiu-jitsu gym for about, I don't know, 9 or 10 months. I injured my shoulder and it just freaks me out to go in there and roll with guys anymore.
Same.
So, I'm just working on it here in the house now. But when I was in there pretty consistently for a couple of years, there were guys that were like the best training partners and you wanted to show up there at 6 a.m. because you knew Paul was going to be there and you wanted to roll with Paul, or you knew Andy was going to be there and you wanted to roll with Andy. That's super helpful. Definitely a top tip. Get a friend to go in there with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the more repetitious that you get with that, the more dynamic your chemistry becomes with each other. It's a really weird thing, like in the gym and like with, you know, martial arts specifically. But like, I remember moments where Joe and I, like, we'd always go an hour before class would begin and we'd warm up. And like, our warm up was like just kicking a fucking soccer ball around the mats. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, we'd do different kicks with the soccer ball. And like, it was super fun for us. And like, after months and years had gone by, we had this chemistry. We'd do like these like tag team sparring matches, and Joe, I knew you were gonna start laughing. And Joe and I were on the same team. So it was 2v2. Only two guys fight at the same time. And one guy sits out on the side, literally just like WWF, like tag
Except
team matches.
Except you're not holding a folding chair, right?
Is no. There
folding
there chairs? There were,
yeah, yeah, maybe. Yep, that's like the more advanced versions, like if you're black belt.
Not officially.
Joe had one hiding. Not
exactly.
Okay.
Well, Joe and I were, Joe was black belt, and like Joe said, I was orange. I think I made it up beyond that, but I don't remember if I did. Green, yeah, I did make it to green.
Did you? Okay.
So I was a green belt, and Joe was a black belt, and we were fighting against two other black belts. And I remember there was one moment, and this is just a definition of our chemistry, the way that it had built up. Joe, I was sparring against another black belt, and like I lured him over into a corner, and I knew exactly what was going to happen. Like I had this all dialed up, because I knew exactly what was on Joe's mind. Joe knew exactly what was on my mind. I drew him back into this corner, so I kind of let him feel like he was getting the advantage. I reached back, I tagged Joe in, and Joe, like in this all in the same motion, jumped into the like the inbounds ring area.
Yeah.
While jumping in the air, he did like this crazy like roundhouse kick into the guy's chest, basically knocked him backwards, and it was like the final point for us to win. So it was just like one continuous motion.
Wow.
Tagging Joe, jumping, doing this perfectly placed kick into his chest, scored the winning point. And it was like the whole place went wild and stuff. But anyway, like there's something to be said for like that chemistry and you know how you can feel.
Man.
Well, and there's
sounds like the end of the All Valley tournament in Karate Kid, man.
It was, yeah.
In the rewrite.
The Ralph Macchio moment.
Yep. Yeah.
That points to something else that I think is really important to keep in mind too, and that's this sense of play. You know, mm-hmm. like, yeah, some people, it's go to the gym and it's all business. But really, I mean, some business is serious. Like sometimes you're playing, you know, for fun. Sometimes you're playing chess and it is very serious, but it is just play. And again, if you're there, if you're in it, if you're around it, if you're doing it every damn day, there's going to be these rooms where you're like, you know, the space that you can just kind of try something new that you normally wouldn't, you know, some variation of a lift, a different training methodology. Dialing something different on your nutrition, you start playing with these different things, and you realize, like, you know, not there isn't one answer to fitness for everybody, but there are some very potent fitness truths. So within that, there's just a lot of room to do different things and to have fun with it. And it's so much easier to have fun with friends, with people that you
agree.
Oh, you know,
amen. Yeah, the training, the sparring partner, the training partner, though, mm-hmm. like there's, that's some of the funnest times I can remember in jiu-jitsu was just these, you know, sometimes you're rolling with a purple belt or brown belt or a guy that's way better than you, but he's not going to kill you. Like you got to find those guys who are in there to like work on their technique, and they get you in a spot, and then they just, you know, you go like, holy shit, and they, yeah, all right, cool, that's fine, you know, and then you get into the next thing. Those were great. Those were fun times.
My other sparring partner in college was Ethan. And I remember testing for our black belt together. And our grandmaster, who's a legend, was just like, all right, fight. And we're both just standing there. And he's like, you guys have to move. And it's like, but I know what he's going to do. And he's like, I know what he's going to do. So it was like
he wants me to move.
It was like that Jet Li movie where it's like it all happened in their minds. But then I also remember it was like 2 years later, we were testing for our second degree and it was so hot. It was like oppressively hot in the room and we were all dying. And this was like the last fight that we had to do. And it was just a rotation. And I ended up facing him and he turns to me and he's just like, how you doing? I'm like, man, I'm dying. He's like, me too. Go light. And when he said that, I knew that I had him. Like I just took me, like threw a double kick. Bam, 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 bam. He's like, what the hell?
Joe's blocking punches with the top of his head, hardest part of the body.
We had a deal.
I said, go light. Love it. I want to bring this all around. We're kind of getting a little bit long in the tooth on this episode, so we got to wrap things up. I want to give John an opportunity to do some final thoughts of this show. But before we do that, really quick, I've got one quick note that I had left to discuss. And Joe, maybe I want a couple of sentences from you after I say this. One of the most magical things about getting your ass to the gym, finding consistency, is that all of a sudden you find this motivation to eat right, to put the right fuel inside of your body, to do the right things while you're out of the gym or while you're not walking. And it's a really cool 1-2 punch. And it's like the gym is, or the walk is the place where all that starts. I want to say that. It's like you kind of build that momentum for putting the right fuel in your body by taking those first steps and by saying 3, 2, 1, get up, or get up, Trinity, and taking that first step. everything starts from that. It's just like this big snowball, and then you're eating the right things. You're consistently going to the gym. You're lifting weights. It's such a big momentum builder. So, Joe, I wanted you to say a couple of sentences, and I know that's not super fair because there's a lot more than a couple of sentences in this.
Well, what I'll
say
is
how important that nutrition is.
Go back to the story that I had when I was at rock bottom, and I was so hungover, and all I needed to do was get some water. And then I finally got myself up. I got that sip of water. I didn't stop there. It's not like, oh, phew, I got water. Now I can just go back to being miserable, but I'm not also thirsty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you start going to the gym and you start to see that this stuff works. My body feels better. I feel much more motivated. And then you realize all the other places that feed into that. And so now maybe you didn't care about nutrition. All of a sudden you recognize that there is a connection between how well I eat and how well my body performs and how good I feel. Nobody has ever gone on a very, very clean, unprocessed food diet for 30 days and then felt terrible, right? Mm-hmm. It's the convenience of the junk food. It's the convenience of the other stuff. And so you start to become disciplined because you yearn for that sense that you're in control. You yearn for that sense that I'm building something. And so if you want to get into fitness, start. That's the easy place to start. Like I said, if it's starting with push-ups, it's starting with push-ups. But just be warned, it's not going to stop there. The next thing you know,
yeah, it's like a big rabbit hole. It's another Matrix movie reference. It's like you go down this rabbit hole. You're researching different things to do. Like you're signing up for the Ladder app and joining Team Maximus. You're looking at different nutritional things you can eat. You're going to Whole Foods, ordering different things. It's like this big rabbit hole of things. And it's like you're downloading it all at once. Like Neo in the Matrix, when he first learns Kung Fu, like he downloads like years and years of, Bruce Lee Kung Fu. And like, he looks at Morpheus and says, I know Kung Fu. And he's like, show me.
Yeah.
But it's like, you're getting all of that information. It's just like this big feed, this big download. It's amazing.
The last thing that I'll leave on is, it's the menu. If I go to a restaurant, that's like a 5-star restaurant, and they hand me this menu that's 8 pages long, it's all in French and Italian, like, what are you going to order? Literally everything on that menu is going to be outstanding. You know what I mean? It's absolutely paralyzing. Now, if I take you to like a burger joint, and I was actually at a burger joint like this down in Austin, which I'll make a plug for it, NADC Burger, not a damn chance. It's one burger. That's what you order.
Chance. We better put that on our list next time we're in Austin.
You want to like change the burger? Not a damn chance. Oh special cool. order? Not a damn chance. You get the burger. That. Okay. So when you go in and they're like, how many? You want just one? You want two? You want fries?
Wow. That's the only option
that's
you
it.
Have is how many of these you
can
want.
I eat 10?
It is so easy to order there and to get food on your plate because that's the only choice you have. So you have to kind of get between those things. And it can be really hard to figure out, well, what really is important, especially in an industry that's absolutely blown out with misinformation, with fear mongering, with, you know, trying to swindle people out of their money. There's all kinds of
negativity too.
Yeah. It's absolutely dumbfounding. And so find a coach, and they don't have to be the greatest coach. You know, the kid who's personal training at like your local health club is just a good place to start, because they're just going to be able to tell you, like, you can just whittle things down to just a couple of options. And that's really, really helpful, especially in the beginning, as you're starting to play with these things. One of these days, you're going to realize, like, there is a path for you to go to very advanced levels if you want. I have seen a number of people come into my gym with no particular fitness goals other than I know this is good for me. Become competitive power lifters, Olympic weightlifters, gymnasts, dancers, right? I even know a guy that got really into pickleball because of all the training that we were doing. It's like, he never set out to do that. It's just like things grow. And so think about that menu thing. When you start feeling overwhelmed, find somebody, a voice that you trust, and ask questions, and they'll help you figure things out. They'll help you get to that next stage. And I think that's a really, really important key.
That's so great. All right. Cool. Well, all you Kims and Jims, I'm going to spell Jims, G-Y-M this week for the sake of this show's topic. All you Kims and Jims out there, I want you to turn the volume down to maybe just a couple of levels, 2 or 3, maybe volume 3. Maybe
I'm
slow down the cadence.
Amp up my levels on the edit, JP. I'll just have to ramp it back up in post.
Turn the volume down slightly. Take a look to your left and see if you got that little lever on your recliner. Pull that little lever. Kick your feet up. Grab that comfy blanket that Joe was talking about that his daughter uses. Wrap yourself into it. Relax. Take a couple deep breaths because it's time for Final Thoughts with Jonathan Miller.
Well, that's a lot of ramp up for me to say, put the recliner back down, stand up, and go take a fucking wash.
3, 2, 1, get up. Get out of that blanket.
I couldn't say anything better than Joe just said for the last hour. I love all that. That's go so take a good. Walk. That's fantastic. Just get started. That's great.
I love it. That's good. Now, Joe, really quickly, once again, I want you to tell our listeners where they can find you, and then we'll close things off here.
Just the easiest place, just go to my website, joesebula.com. You can Google me. It'll pop up. Again, it's C-E-B-U-L-A. Find me. Reach out to me. I answer all my DMs.
Love cool. it.
We'll put links in the show notes, too.
Yes, we'll put some links in there. For God's sake, if you like the show, you want us to keep it going, please hit that like button, subscribe to us, leave a comment for us, let us know what you like listening to, maybe even give us some feedback on stuff you'd like to hear on future episodes of the podcast.
And follow us on all the social media
platforms. Send us money. Give us your money. Just kidding. Don't do that. Follow us on all the social media platforms at Bad Weather Pod. Visit the website, badweatherwellness.com. You guys, thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Take very good care of yourselves. Bye-bye. I wanna forget my bad days, all my bad days, and be okay, spend my spare change down at the arcade, and then I'll say everything sucks.